so glad you're with us on NFL Live, everyone. Week 11, obviously, underway. We got tons to get to. We will talk about that NFC West battle that the Seahawks won against the Cardinals last night. But lots of news right now going on with the New Orleans Saints, and these people right here cannot wait to talk about it. You see Ryan Clark already dancing. Marcus Spears there and Mina Kimes, and we're going to have Field Yates as well with some more details on injuries and more. But let's get right to it, okay? Adam Schefter reporting that Taysom Hill will be the starting quarterback for the Saints over Jameis Winston. Of course, Drew Brees was injured last week. Now Hill, he's been a versatile piece of the offense, getting the reins against the Falcons Sunday. But then just moments ago, Sean Payton, the head coach of the Saints, was asked about this, says he's not naming a starter yet. Take a listen.
Who are we talking about?
Taysom Hill.
Yeah, I'm sorry, too, because I haven't announced that either one of those two are starting.
So that was just leaked by someone else, I guess, today?
I didn't see today or what you're talking about. Someone has been named the starter, but we haven't announced it.
Okay, so that's the first time that they've heard the sound because it just came in. I mean, I'm looking at your face. Marcus, you're laughing. You go first. What do you think about all this now?
Me? I'm going first?
You're going first right now. Yes.
Okay, listen. Listen, I know the reports, and I'm not finna get into what the reports, all of that stuff. I know that this is smart by Sean Payton. This is a football tactic. I've said that. This is a football tactic. Now, for all intents and purposes, Schefter never gets it wrong. Very rarely does he ever get it wrong. So I expect Taysom Hill to be the starter. But with that being said, why would Sean Payton give the Atlanta Falcons any information about what they're going to do from an offensive standpoint? So he's playing coy. He's playing like he doesn't know. He said we named the starter, but no one knows. This is ultimate gameplay by Sean Payton, who, by the way, was the offensive coordinator when I first got to Dallas. This is what Sean Payton does, and this is not good for the Atlanta Falcons.
My only regret this report. Oh, I cannot wait to get to Ryan, and I wish this news had broken during NFL Live because you would have seen Ryan's brain break in real time, and it would have just been absolutely incredible television. His eyes would have bugged out of his head. Okay, so the reason we're all surprised is not because of who Taysom Hill is, it's because of who he isn't, or rather who he wasn't last year, which was the Saints' quarterback. Drew Brees didn't play for 6 games, and they went with Teddy over Taysom. Drew Brees went out with an injury last week, and they went with Jameis over Winston. That's why everybody is so surprised. Now, approaching this purely from a football perspective, Marcus is 100% right. This introduces an element of gamesmanship, of surprise. The Falcons are going to have to prepare for this and also the possibility that it's all smoke and mirrors. I will say this, though. The Falcons do have a surprisingly decent run defense, and something I would be concerned about in this game if I'm New Orleans, other than, I guess, the question of whether Taysom Hill can play quarterback, which we really don't know, is the fact that Taysom Hill fumbled the ball 4 times last year, which, by my math, is almost as many times as he's completed passes in the NFL. So that's something I'd be concerned about as well.
Listen, I don't know nothing about no math, all right? Because there go Mina bringing up math. This is not a math situation. This is about reality. And the New Orleans Saints and the Taysom Hill saga, when the 30 for 30 comes out, whenever, it's going to be touching because they're going to talk about the injuries at BYU being undrafted at 24. And then they're going to get into this reality show that's been him with the Saints, right? Because for a little bit, it was like Punk'd. Remember, because you remember Punk'd, you know, things would happen and it would be tricked. Sean Payton's been trying to trick us for a very long time. Sean Payton has been punking us for years, right? Steve Young, Steve Old, whatever you want to call him.
Kutcher.
Taysom is the next caller. He's going to be freaking Hall of Fame and all this, right? And then Taysom Hill, if he's going to start, he's obviously been catfishing us because somewhere in there is a real quarterback that he just hasn't shown. Right? So he's been playing the role of somebody else while he was always this other person because he's been playing the role of a dude that can't really throw the football. But obviously, if he's gonna start, we're getting catfish, and Taysom Hill is way more than we saw. But then they switched all the way from MTV and went to more hard-hitting more hard-hitting reality shows like First 48, because now somebody done read it. Because Taysom Hill is the quarterback, but what Sean Payton has said, one of y'all told. And if you watch First 48, which I know some of you do, they always tell. All this stuff about stop snitching, cold of the street, how they was on Goodfellas, that is not right. They always rap. So Taysom Hill's gonna start, and either he's been catfishing us, punking us, or something, or they gonna run the ball 47 times and have to rush for 400 yards to win the game, because Taysom Hill can't throw.
Yeah.
He's like Tebow if Tebow was faster and couldn't throw.
You know what? I do like the First 48. Let's get some numbers on this as well as a comparison. Looking at the tail of the tape, the Saints going with the far less experienced Taysom Hill. Although his career total QBR slightly better than Winston's, Jameis certainly has the edge when it comes to experience as a passer, ranking second in passing yards through a player's first five NFL seasons with only Peyton Manning ahead of him. The turnovers have been the issue. By the way, Sean Payton, by last check, was still talking. We got people in our production room. It's called a control room, whatever it's called. They're listening to it right now. So if anything else happens, we're going to bring it to you guys. But Mina, you mentioned the fact that the Falcons do have a good run defense.
Yeah.
If we do see Taysom Hill as the starter, which Sean Payton still didn't want to tell us for sure, what do you think the Saints offense really does look like with him in there?
I think that it's obviously going to be very run heavy, because what we have seen out of Taysom Hill in the preseason and then his very limited starts is that he has not been super accurate on the sort of underneath stuff that the Saints thrive in. So I imagine we're going to see him booting out a lot. There's going to be a lot of trickery. But I think Ryan perhaps inadvertently mentioned the key number, which is 30. You talked about a 30 for 30 being made about Taysom Hill. Well, Jameis Winston had 30 picks last year, and Taysom Hill is 30 years old. To me, the Saints had to decide which of these 30s is worse. The fact that we got a dude who turns the ball over that much, or a dude who's getting his first NFL start at 30, and they went with the 30-year-old, and we're going to see how it goes.
We're going to be all over this all show long, so don't worry about that. Let's bring Field Yates in for more. And sometimes, Field, when things don't make a whole lot of sense or they seem abnormal, the reasoning can always be traced back to money. Tell us why the contracts for both Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill could be factoring in here.
Well, Laura, one thing that I've always maintained is that the Saints love Taysom Hill more than the internet likes and loves Taysom Hill. We see it every Sunday when he's utilized in a small package. When Drew Brees is the normal starting quarterback, Twitter loses its mind, but the Saints keep going back to the well. And you think back to this offseason when Shefty tweeted that the Saints had signed Taysom Hill to a two-year contract. That part would be fine, except for the fact that it's worth $21 million. It was the latest sign that Sean Payton and the Saints believe very strongly in Taysom Hill. They ended up signing Jameis Winston for a base value of just $1.1 million. I'm not here to tell you that Taysom Hill is unquestionably going to be better than what Jameis Winston could be if given starting opportunities, but while this news was shocking when we first heard it today, it wasn't all that surprising when you think back to the investment that the Saints have made in Taysom Hill. They've been working hard to develop him for the past few years, and they rewarded him with their faith this offseason. So part of me is thinking backwards as we look forwards to Sunday and this decision to make Hill the starter.
Yeah, it's interesting there on your bottom line. It was another report that coming from ESPN's Diana Russini talking about the fact that there's not even an offensive package for Jameis Winston in this game plan.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The NFC
AFC West, also known as the most competitive division in football. And last night's Seahawks win over the Cardinals featured a Russell Wilson who took care of that football. Moved ahead of Steve Young, by the way, for the highest all-time winning percentage in primetime matchups. Apparently, he likes the spotlight. More importantly, though, this win puts the Seahawks in prime position to secure the NFC West. According to our Football Power Index, Seattle now holds a 51% chance to win the division. Lots of implications for last night. Seattle came through. And Marcus, you wanted to see more from Carlos Dunlap on that Seattle defense, of course, coming over from the Bengals in a trade. What did he show you last night?
Man, in the honor of Jeezy and Gucci Mane having a versus battle last night, I like to say what it do, what the business is. Because that defense for the Seattle Seahawks showed up. They gave up 21 points. They closed out a game. The trade looked magnificent for Carlos Dunlap. They needed that in a major way. But I also want to bring something else to people's attention. That holding call that happened in the end zone that resulted in a safety, that's considered a great pass rush move, but it also is considered a big-time defensive play by the D-tackle. So they came ready to play. Shaq Collardown got to him, didn't really give up many explosive plays. At times, I was frustrated because I thought the DBs were giving these wide receivers a little too much respect by playing off. But for the most part, this Seattle Seahawks defense, if they can continue to uptick like that against an offense who we all respect in this league, then we can start talking about Seattle being in the Super Bowl conversation again out of the NFC. But it's to be determined if they can keep this up and keep that type of momentum going. They were great last night when it came to making sure that Russ had the ball enough and making key stops in key situations.
I try not to go too homerish talking about Seattle, but also in honor of Jeezy, I put on for my city, and yeah. I was impressed. The only thing I didn't like about that Carlos Dunlap sack, Marcus, is that he's wearing number 43. It just doesn't look right. You guys know,
it's
right?
Ugly.
Like, watching him get those sacks with the number 43, it's weird. It doesn't feel right. I want to talk about Russell Wilson in the offense, though, because I think we saw, like, a vintage Russ performance. It was very efficient, and what really jumped out to me was that he didn't look like a sitting duck back there when he was getting blitzed, which is what's happened over the last few weeks. Some of that is that he was hitting his hot reads. He went 10 for 10 against the blitz. A lot of it also is that they were able to mix in runs. It wasn't excessive. They still passed more than they ran, but that Carlos Hyde really ran the ball efficiently. He averaged over 5 yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
And an efficient run game, Mina Kimes, notorious hater of early down runs, is saying this, can be a quarterback's best friend in situations like that. You saw that with Seattle last night.
Yeah, Ryan Clark, if you don't have a Jeezy quote yourself, I'm going to be really disappointed here. But I am going to ask you about Kyler Murray. So what do you think about Kyler and the Cardinals going forward?
Listen, I think Kyler Murray, he's a little early, right? He's a little early on his development. This team's a little early in getting to this point where they are contending for the NFC West. Let's not forget, just 2 years ago, this team moved on from a top 10 pick at quarterback in Josh Rosen. They move on from Steve Wilkes. They go out, get Cliff Kingsbury, and they draft Kyler Murray. I think to be at this point after a big fight against Seattle to win a game with 3 turnovers by Russ, after having a Hail Mary to have to win against the Buffalo Bills, I think that their record shows us a little bit or says a little bit more about them than they truly are. And then when you have Kyler Murray, he's out there fighting, his shoulder is hurting. He's really what some would call a sole survivor during those times late on in the game. And he was trying to make some plays and he just couldn't. This defense really stepped up. This defense really stepped up for Seattle. And listen, Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals will have their time. But right now, isn't it, Russ still runs the division from the quarterback position. And last night, he outplayed the young second-year player from Arizona.
Woven in so beautifully, Ryan. One thing, Kyler Murray was limited to a season-low 15 yards on the ground. That factored in. The Cardinals now 0-5-1 when Murray runs for less than 20 yards.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Week 11 already off to a great start. It's only going to get better. And yeah, we've got the Chiefs and the Raiders once again. Now, remember the last time they faced off, and of course the Raiders won this game, but it was really in the second half where the Raiders started to take control. They played exactly how they needed to, and the Chiefs, admittedly, on their end, were not up to par. The question is, can this be done again? And listen, when you're going up against Patrick Mahomes, you'd like to have your full defensive complement, like, all week long. Field Yates here with us. The Raiders have a lot of their defense on the reserve COVID-19 list. So what is the path for them to play in this game?
Yeah, Laura, unfortunately for the Raiders, this is actually familiar territory, as it was just a few weeks ago where basically the entire Raiders offensive line was unable to practice during the week coming off of their bye because of contact tracing. Well, as you just said, much of their defense unable to practice right now as they are also in contact tracing. The path to them all playing is continuing to test negative. The expectation is that tomorrow by 4 p.m. Eastern time, many of those players, if not all of the players that have been placed on COVID-19 because of close contact, not those that have tested positive, will be removed from the list. The last barrier is to test negative again on Sunday. As we know, that's the case for every NFL player, but because these guys have been classified as high-risk close contacts, we'll watch their tests even closer. I would say this, though, Laura, the NFL feels pretty good about this game, all things considered. As we know, the last time the Raiders were in this situation, their Sunday night primetime game got moved out of the window. Here they are, still scheduled to play Sunday night at 8 o'clock against the Chiefs.
Yeah, it's a good point, Field. Stay right there. We got more coming from you. Ryan, you just heard what Field Yates had to say about this and the Raiders' defense. What do you think the impact is of those guys not being able to practice really that much ahead of this game?
Oh, well, shoot, you hope it's the type of impact that not practicing had on Ben Roethlisberger, because if you can do that, then why ever practice? Just stay at home and homeschool your kids. But when you're looking at the Raiders and going up against Patrick Mahomes, it's almost like it doesn't even matter anyway. You know what he's going to do. You know what type of player he's going to be. Maybe resting helps. And this, the thing I worry about with this defense is if it's the secondary players. The secondary is extremely young. The secondary needs that type of communication during the week. You need to be able to understand what you're going to get out of certain formations and have it play out before you. Because when you're going up against Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy and Patrick Mahomes, the thing you don't want to be is confused. The thing you don't want to be is on a different page, because any type of crease, any type of opening, they can take advantage of it. So that's going to be the huge part. Do you understand the playbook? Do you know what you need to do?
Listen, that these players have to go through this, but it didn't matter. Patrick Mahomes about to go crazy. Everybody know it. Everybody understands what transpired in the first game of the season against the Raiders. The Raiders took a Nipsey Hussle victory lap around the stadium. All of that stuff is being calculated. You and I, L Boogie, we talk. L Boogie is what I call Laura Rutledge, America. You and I talked to Travis Kelce a few days ago, all right? And Travis Kelce said he didn't hold people accountable. He held himself responsible for not playing the way that they're supposed to play. And I believe the Kansas City Chiefs, angry, is the scariest thing in the NFL. And that's what they'll be against the Raiders. And if the Raiders can somehow produce offensively like they did in the first game, I'm going to go to Kansas City and pull Steve Spagnuolo aside and ask him, why in the hell couldn't you stop the Raiders from putting up 40 points twice, okay? But outside of that, Patrick Mahomes and this offense and Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, listen, I'm going. If they give up 40, I'm going to Kansas City, all right? And the bottom line is this. The Kansas City Chiefs offense and Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy and Patrick Mahomes are petty. They are petty, but petty in a good way. don't think for a second that they're not going to try to put on an offensive extravaganza against the Las Vegas Raiders. All right, Mina.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Mina, Derek Carr had a couple of really nice throws in that game last time when they beat the Chiefs. So how can he perform so well in this game that Marcus Spears has to go to Kansas City?
He did, Laura. He was excellent in that game, and it kind of unlocked something in Derek Carr, right? Which was specifically the deep ball. He's been in a different guy since then. He's been actually really good this season. He's the best quarterback that we're not really talking about. Third down, QBR. Best quarterback in the NFL is Patrick Mahomes. Second best has been Derek Carr. I think drafting Ruggs has really been great for him. Aguilar has been excellent, too. And they're going to have to be excellent in this game because Marcus is right. This is going to be a horse race. Like, all they can do is try to keep up. I've been trying to think of another Jeezy joke ever since you said, go crazy, Marcus, and I've been struggling. But I think you were spot on with that one. The dope boys are coming to town. So it's all on Derek Carr, man. It's a lot of pressure on him, but he has been playing up to that standard.
Yeah, you know, listen, why are we so, no one's talking about Gucci. Like, everyone's just talking about Jeezy. I guess
Jeezy better shout out NFL Live.
Yeah, he better. By the way, the Chiefs and the Raiders scoring on over 52% of their drives. That ranks first and second in the NFL on the leaderboard this season. Let's get some more injury news with Field Yates, and we begin with Drew Lock. Field, what do you know about him?
Yeah, Drew Lock has been banged up this week, Laura. We got a lot of quarterback injuries, but this one I think is the most up in the air. He's been dealing with some ribs issues. A guy that obviously has missed time once so far this season. It could be Brett Rypien taking snaps for the Broncos. Other quarterbacks to keep an eye on include Teddy Bridgewater, who of course left last week's game late because of a knee injury, officially listed as questionable. And then Matthew Stafford has that thumb issue that's been bothering him a bit this week, has been limited and practiced quite a bit as a result of it. Tough guy. I expect him to be out there on Sunday for the Lions. And some recent news from the Packers, and good news of that, is that Devontae Adams, their all-everything wide receiver, sat out practice Wednesday, Thursday as well. He's not even on the injury report. That tells you everything you need to know. We are at the point of the season where load management will be a thing for teams. So Devontae Adams will be good to go. And they play the Colts on Sunday, who have been one of the best pass defenses in the entire NFL.
Yeah, good news for Aaron Rodgers, though, either way. All right, talk to me about Myles Garrett, placed in the reserve COVID-19 list, not going to play on Sunday against the Eagles. What else do we know about him?
Yeah, Laura, interesting news this morning. As just minutes apart, the Browns released two separate statements, one saying that a player had tested positive for COVID-19. Minutes later, they announced they were placing Myles Garrett on the reserve COVID-19 list. Now, I think people are going to assume that means he has tested positive, as he has been out of the building for a few days experiencing some flu-like symptoms. We do not know for sure, and teams are not allowed to disclose if a player has tested positive. Here's what we know, though. He's out for Sunday's game against the Eagles. And we'll see. He could be in some peril of missing next week's game as well. And when you talk about the list of defensive player of the year candidates, if Myles Garrett's not at the top of it, he's right there, just a spot below Aaron Donald. Those two have been on another level this year. So this is a big, big blow for the Browns in a huge game on Sunday.
Yeah, Myles Garrett leads the NFL this season with 9.5 sacks, also tied with Marlon Humphrey for the league lead with 4 forced fumbles. Marcus, how big of a deal is it to be without Myles Garrett?
It's a huge deal, and I know Carson Wentz is a man of faith, and he understands that prayer changes things, because I'd have been praying for Myles Garrett not to play too, based on what he's been doing all season long. But this definitely makes it a bit harder for everybody else around him. The thing about Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald, and we talk about these guys in this vein, is that he makes things easier for all of the guys around him. This defense benefits from the fact that Myles Garrett is on the field. You have to slide protection. You have to make sure you have an extra blocker over there for him. So he initiates plan changes for the offenses that he's going against. Trust me, Doug Peterson had a plan in place to try to handle Myles Garrett. That's what these type of players do. I played with DeMarcus Ware. It was the same way. RC played with Polamalu and some other great defensive players. It was the same way. You had to account for him every single play. And when you remove him, guys' jobs get harder that's around them. So I want to see how Cleveland defense responds.
Yeah, it could be a good prove-it moment for them either way. So who are these teams really, the Titans and the Ravens? Well, this may be a good time to find out. Keep an eye on Lamar Jackson going against the Titans man coverage Sunday. Jackson boasts the fifth best QBR against man since he entered the league. He'll have a great chance to do some damage against Tennessee's secondary potentially. The Titans have been one of the league's worst defenses when deploying man coverage this year without much luck getting to the quarterback. So these are our picks. This is what we're doing here. You can see that we're all on the Ravens. We think the Ravens get a big win against the Titans. And you know what? Okay, I'm going to go to Ryan in a second, but Marcus is shaking his head because when we all pick the same team on this show, the team loses. So anyway, I'm sorry, Ravens, if we've cursed you. It's just ridiculous. I can't believe it. Anyway, we don't discuss our picks before the show. Ryan, let's talk about this game, though, for these two teams. How important is it for them to get back on track?
I mean, this game is extremely important. These are two teams that had a distinct identity last year and coming into the season, and they've forgotten about that. They feel fat. They feel happy. I mean, I felt like these teams, had lemonade in the shade with their feet up. I mean, probably eating lemon pepper wings and a freeze cup. Shout out to Gucci. And that's how these teams were playing. They made sure and they got away from what they are. They got away from power football offensively, play action game. They got away from playing good defense. And they have to figure those things out. There was no way you could have told me at the beginning of the season that these two teams would be playing after midseason and it wouldn't matter and I wouldn't care and it wouldn't be to see who was going to be at the top of the AFC challenging the Kansas City Chiefs. But that's where these two teams have fallen. And so this week is extremely important, not only because they need W's, but because they need to figure out who they are in 2020 and if they can advance being that team in the playoffs this year.
Els, listen, this is one of the – Ryan hit the point. Like, he took a lot of the what the reality is.
Like,
two teams searching for themselves because – look, no, that's fire. It's fire. I mean, we think alike sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. But here's the bottom line, right? You think about the Baltimore Ravens and what their expectations were. This was a team we thought would challenge the Kansas City Chiefs. We thought would be right there in the conversation at the end of the year, and they have seemed to not understand who they are or who they're built to be. And this evolution of the passing game that I've been screaming about, forget all of that. Like, the Ravens need to make sure that they at least go into this game with a plan to do what they do. And then vice versa, because what I think is the most important thing and huge is that Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams is not going to play in this game. And the last outing we saw the Baltimore Ravens in, the New England Patriots and Damian Harris ran through them. And last year when we saw these two teams play, Derrick Henry went crazy for 190-some-odd yards on the ground. So will the Ravens' defense stand up this game and not allow the Tennessee Titans to be on schedule, to have Ryan Tannehill comfortable, to have us talking about Derrick Henry on Big Man Ballin' again next week?
I'm going to end this love fest because while I agree with you about the Titans taking advantage of the Ravens' run defense and the injuries, Marcus, I actually don't agree with you about the Ravens. I think they need to evolve, and I think this is the game to do it. One of the biggest injuries last week was the loss of Nick Boyle, their blocking tight end, one of the best blocking tight ends in football. This is a Ravens offense that already lost their two best offensive linemen. They can't run the ball the way they used to. They need to figure out a passing game. Fortunately, in Tennessee, you got a pass rush that'll be missing, Jadeveon Clowney. It's the 25th best pass defense in football. This is an opportunity for them to show us that they can pass the football, that they've got a different shade to this offense because the personnel has changed and the offensive scheme needs to evolve with it.
Yeah, one thing for the Ravens, the last time we saw them, it was just a ridiculous weather game and the rain was falling, all that. It should be much better in Baltimore, about 59 degrees at kickoff, so that could factor in and make them feel a whole lot better. All right, a couple weeks ago in San Francisco, Aaron Rodgers told 49ers linebacker Fred Warner that he was the best linebacker in football. You may be like, all right, what does that have to do with Colts linebacker Darius Leonard, who the Packers play this week? But the thing is, Leonard heard about it. He's ready to prove Rodgers wrong. And this could be something to watch in this Packers-Colts game. Listen to what Darius Leonard had to say.
I seen it as soon as he said it. you hear things like that. That just give you that extra motivation to go out and play. I've been looking forward to this game ever since he said it. You know, just kind of, you know, he's been in the league for a long time. And, you know, for him to say that to Fred Warner, you know, they play on tight twice a year. So, you know, my first time, I want to leave a mark and hopefully, you know, change his mind of, you know, what he said about that.
Darius Leonard's been leaving a mark all over the field, by the way, all season long. How about our picks for this game? We're totally split. The girls are on the Packers. The boys are on the Colts. So we'll see who ends up being right. It'll probably be us, Mina.
We know what that means.
I know. It's going to be, Mina and I are going to be right.
It's Mina, y'all too.
Mina, we're on the Packers. What do you think they need to do to win? Davante Adams, by the way, Field Yates reporting earlier in the show, should be good to go for this game.
And that is part of the reason I'm picking them. Rodgers, who, by the way, learned what we all know, which is players do not like it when you rank players. Somebody's going to be offended. He is going to have to win this game for Green Bay by throwing deep, because that, to me, is where the Colts are vulnerable. This defense is very good, but they like to keep the football in front of them. They want you to run. They want you to throw it short. As a result, I think MVS and Davante Adams are going to be enormous in this game. We're going to see explosive plays if Green Bay is going to win it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think that's the formula. But I also want to give a shout-out to what Indy does up front, especially with DeForest Buckner. Obviously, we found out Archery would be out of this game, which I think he's been coming on and playing out of his mind. Oh. Really good football if you watch them up front. But you still have Houston. And this defensive line coached by Brian Baker, who was one of my D-line coaches in Dallas, they are going to understand how to rush and how to keep Aaron Rodgers in the pocket. Look, we know Aaron Rodgers does a tremendous job throwing the football, but I think we forget sometimes that Aaron Rodgers can get on the edges of defenses and really cause havoc, even with his legs, but more so extending plays and being able to hit those deep shots. This Indy defense plays real sound football in the front seven, and I think that's the reason they're going to prevail in this game, and along with being able to get pressure on Aaron Rodgers without having to add any extra rushers.
Yeah, another piece of this is the run game of the Indianapolis Colts. And I know the numbers don't say that the Green Bay Packers are bad against the rush, but you can go back to last week against the Jacksonville Jaguars and see the way that James Robinson was able to run the football on him. And he actually had two touchdowns called back. And so I think that's going to be huge for the Indianapolis Colts. You want to defend Aaron Rodgers. You want to do a good job of stopping him. Then keep him off the field. This also keeps Phillip Rivers from turning the ball over, even though outside the corners of the Packers are hurt. And so I think this game is going to be about the run game of the Indianapolis Colts and this very effective yet boring defense that they have. And the reason I say that is not a lot happens. They don't put a lot of pressure on by bringing extra people, but they put pressure with four and they make you throw the football in front of them and they tackle. And that's a great way to play defense if you're playing against Aaron Rodgers. But like Mina said, they're going to take some shots. You defend those shots on the outside, you have a great chance of beating the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, ESPN's Football Power Index expects this one to be really close too, giving the Packers just above a 54% chance to win over the Indianapolis Colts.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
All right, back to the Saints. We told you earlier that Taysom Hill only has 10 completions in his NFL career. Now set to make history if he really does start this game, becoming the first player since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970 to start at QB with multiple career scrimmage touchdowns, yet zero passing touchdowns. The last player to do this, Ed Rutkowski for the Bills in 1968. You see him right there, by the way, when the running back rejoined Buffalo after four other quarterbacks went down with injuries. All right. Time for smart lineup decisions informed by IBM Watson. Field Yates back with us here. And Field, what are the fantasy implications of Hill starting at quarterback for the Saints?
Actually, pretty massive, Laura. So Taysom Hill entering this week was listed as a tight end on ESPN Fantasy. We added quarterback to his eligible positions, but we have a policy that we do not remove a position from a player during the week. It's very, very hard to find a tight end that you can trust, not named Travis Kelce, in fantasy football. Taysom Hill actually is the highest scoring projected tight end eligible player for week 11. It may not have to be pretty, but the bar is not particularly high to clear to be a usable piece at tight end in fantasy football. He has been at it like wildfire throughout the day so far today. Taysom Hill will be one of the most popular tight end eligible players in week 11 on ESPN Fantasy.
It's just wild when you think about how this whole thing's shaken out. So, yeah, add Taysom Hill to your fantasy team. Let's see who we're picking in this game, by the way, because this got a whole lot more interesting. As you can see here, we're going to show you our picks. Marcus on the Saints, Ryan on the Falcons, Mina and Laura going with the Saints. All right, Ryan, just very quickly, did you switch to the Falcons? Were you always picking the Falcons? Tell me about this pick.
Yes, I switched to the Falcons, y'all, because we just had to go back to college to find passing highlights of a man that's about to start his first game in the NFL at 30 years old, y'all. And then we just talked to Phil Gates about fantasy, about a man who gonna start at quarterback, and he is one of the highest tight ends. This don't make that don't make y'all think, okay, what the hell going on? Is that not confusing?
It is a little bit, to be totally honest.
Stop laughing. I'm not laughing, y'all. I'm frustrated. I'm not laughing.
Ryan was
okay,
people
okay.
New Orleans. Oh, you from the okay. NO.
Your voice
you
got
from
as
the
high
NO.
As
you
mine.
Supposed to love the
that
Saints.
That was incredible.
How am I love the Saints right now? You are starting a top fantasy tight end who don't have no passing highlights, and he 30. Something ain't right.
Mina, Ryan was cringing during the college highlights. I thought he had some nice throws there at
oh
BYU. Come on.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. the kid at BYU now is pretty good, too. Ryan, I don't even think my voice can get that high. I'll try.
Oh, no.
Because of their defense. Okay, this defense, and by the way, I believe that defense is a big part of why Sean Payton rolled with this gamble, because the defense has been so good.
All right, well, I mean, the good thing is that only dogs could hear Mina there. Let's go with one more thing before we go, and we begin with Ryan Clark, who's asleep now.
Listen, Mike Vrabel, get your team together. You are a coach that worries about every phase. You're the guy that's on the field with the special teams, with the offense, with defense. You make sure your team is in line. That's not what you guys look like against the Indianapolis Colts. Find your identity, get back to what you do, and coach this team in a way that you have to get this win.
Hey, low key, y'all want to hear something crazy? The Washington football team got the best quarterback in the NFC East. And I believe Alex Smith is going to continue this trend. Look, Carson Wentz, we thought it was him. Nope. Daniel Jones has played better the last few weeks, but is it him? Nope. It's Alex Smith, because Dak Prescott is injured on the season. So shout out to Alex Smith. Number one, getting back. Number two, being the best quarterback in the NFC East.
If you haven't been watching Texans games, I don't blame you, but you've been missing out on some pretty good performances from Deshaun Watson, who, by the way, is fourth in the NFL in passer rating right now. And a prime example of why wins are not a quarterback stat. Watch the game. He is balling out in some terrible circumstances. I hope things turn around for him, because he deserves it.
She got it in. Wins are not a quarterback
stat. RC, you don't
stat.
Think them.
She got it in. She got it
RC,
in.
RC, you don't think them DBs at Toledo.
Okay, we'll see you next
Falcons.
Week.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.